Welcome back to the David Watson podcast. Sometimes I get to speak to somebody who's been at the heart of an injustice. And none more so than today's guest, the author who wrote a book which shed the light on the breakdown of the We charity in Canada. And one of the things we discussed in What We Lost is how complicit the media were and how the politicians didn't care about the truth. Hello, welcome to the David Watson podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. And thank you for your patience. For those of you that are tuning in, I'm late for my own podcast, and which has caused its own issues. So I appreciate you being patient with me. Very, very much appreciate it. This is kind of when I read through the press release that was sent to me. One of the things that interested me a great deal, because one, there seems to be a great deal of difficulty navigating these conversations in general lately. And that's down to some of the things that are highlighted that to do with tackling the government and some of the difficulties we had in COVID, where, you know, it's, like I said, it become difficult to navigate without sounding like you're either an extreme conspiracy theorist or you've got your head in the sand. And there seems to be a middle ground where there's things that are genuinely have been missed. And it's how have you navigated bringing this to people's attention?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, the book that I wrote, right, What We Lost, it is really focused on, I think I've had to navigate I think it was a challenging exercise for people to navigate between, you know, fact and fiction,
yeah,
between questions that are posed and, you know, what are really the answers. And, you know, this question of like, where you have lots of smoke and, you know, there's a human reaction to say there must be fire. And one of the jobs of the media, you know, is really, should be, you know, to engage in investigative journalism to tell us, look, where there's lots of smoke, is there really fire or is there not really fire? And, you know, one of the problems that happened in what came to be known as the We Charity scandal, you know, in Canada, is that there was a real, you know, a political desire to create just a lot of smoke and fill the air with like the sense that the Trudeau government was corrupt and that this We Charity organization was a bad organization because, you know, it was aligned with the Trudeau government and it received a, you know, grant money that it shouldn't have received and all these allegations. And what we needed, you needed someone to unpack all of that and say, wait a minute, you know, these are all the things that are percolating out there. What's true? What's not true? How can we help you? And no one's really willing to do that work anymore because everyone's a bit of a partisan. And, you know, in many ways, my book was about trying to navigate those lines and just say, you know, what's a conspiracy theory and what's a fact and what's the evidence? And so I, you know, I'm a lawyer by trade. I'm a partner in a law firm, Milbank, in New York. I'm a litigator and I conduct internal investigations for a living. And so part of my approach in thinking about these things is a really evidence-based way of looking at the world to say, what do we really know and what do we really not know? What's conjecture and spin and what's, you know, facts on the ground that we have to deal with, even if we don't like them? And so I tried to navigate the terrain by really, you know, putting on my lawyer's hat and really focusing on evidence above and beyond everything else.
You said something there that is quite interesting in that when things were happening, people became quite partisan and it became just as much about chucking, you know, like you're either all in and believe me or you don't. And people, like you say, that people were just ignoring a conversation that could be based on fact before you even had a chance to make a suggestion or to say, look, can we have a conversation so I can find out where we both understand each other there's an immediate label thrown in your direction. You're like, no.
Right.
Again, and it's like, well, how do I navigate this? There's a bridge here that needs to be gapped. And you're just like, how am I going to do this? Because everybody is, I mean, I think when you said partisan, it's just perfect. Before you've even able to sit down and have a conversation with somebody, they want to know what your beliefs are. And you just like, no, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about here. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter if I'm reading my horoscope at 9 o'clock this morning, or whether right. I'm voting for Trump, or whether I think Trudeau is the best person since sliced bread, or I've been right. reading about the full moon. That this is a fact, right. based investigation about a charity.
Mm-hmm. So, that's right.
How did you bridge it?
How did I? So sorry. How did I bridge the gap between?
Being able to have the conversation and, you know.
Oh, I see. So, you know, part of it is, I don't know that. So I had the conversations with hard conversations with people because I just came to it with a little bit of an open mind, and I announced my open-mindedness. I mean, I tried very hard. I mean, my work, is a little bit biased, and I never hided that. I hid that from anyone. I said that it was an insider's perspective, on the attack against Canada's largest children's charity, because I was on the board of We Charity, and you know, I had a front row seat and a backstage pass, as I say in the book, to what happened in this whole mess. And I, you know, I never hid that from anybody, but I would always say, look, I'm very open-minded. I just want to present what happened, the good, the bad, and the ugly, warts and all. And I just want to understand your perspective, and I want to make sure that I'm doing justice to the way you see things. And that was true of both people who felt like they'd been left out and really felt like they were supporters of We Charity and felt like We Charity had been maligned unfairly. But it was also true of people who felt like We Charity got what was coming to it, or that who had really questions about We Charity, or who didn't like the organization or its co-founders. And I just tried to position myself as someone who was like very open-minded and willing to listen and engage, and that I didn't have an agenda other than try and figure things out. And I think when you really, if you do a good enough job of establishing yourself as not having a particular agenda other than to understand, people are suspicious and skeptical of that. But I do think that they come around pretty quickly to really appreciating the opportunity to talk to someone like that and recognizing the sort of benefits of that.
So what were the accusations that were thrown at the We Charity?
So the story here is that, well, the first accusation, the real core accusations were thrown against the Trudeau government. And really, would it be helpful, David, for me to just go back a little bit and explain how these elements
came about? Yeah, 100%.
So,
thank you.
Okay. So you know, for those who don't know anything about it, the We Charity scandal, as it came to be called, it has its genesis in something called the Canada Student Service Grant Program. And what this was a Canadian government program that was initiated by the Liberal government under Justin Trudeau in April and May of 2020, that was, you know, before the first summer of COVID. And the program was basically designed to give grant money, up to almost $500 million worth, to students, mostly high school graduates who were beginning college, but anybody in that range. Basically, it would give you a grant if you spent a certain number of hours volunteering for a nonprofit in that summer, on the theory that it was going to be hard for most people to get jobs that summer, right? Because COVID, you couldn't leave your house. All these people were not going to have costs for post-secondary education. They weren't going to be able to work the summer in the way that they might have expected. Here's how the government could help. There's also nonprofits that are struggling at the same time. Let's match them up and have this grant program. And what the Trudeau government did is it asked We Charity, this organization that has a 25-year history around the world, but specifically in Canada, to administer the program. The charity was a nonprofit, didn't stand to make a dollar. It would just get its administrative costs paid and would administer this program. And the reason We Charity was selected by the Trudeau government to do this was because We Charity was the only organization in Canada at the time that had the infrastructure to put young people and volunteering together, because that's what We Charity does.
Yeah.
So for anyone who doesn't know We Charity is a youth empowerment charity. It focuses on putting curricula in schools that help young people become civic minded, identify volunteering opportunities, you know, make do it, you know, do good in the world, basically, and like promote activism and change making on the part of young people. And it provided educators with the tools to help teach that kind of civic mindedness to young children. And, you know, it's a very powerful force. That curricula was in 30,000 schools. You know, there were the young people in the millions who participated in this type of programming were celebrated in these giant concerts called We Days with celebrities and politicians and high-profile thinkers of all kinds coming to celebrate them. And you couldn't buy a ticket to the concert. You could only get it if you did one global act of service. And so the idea with We Charity was, its raison d'etre, in addition to its international development work, was to do this. And so the government gave We Charity these programs and said, look, run this program. But right as soon as the program started, the allegations started. And really, they were allegations of cronyism by the Trudeau government. And what the opposition politicians in Canada, who were trying to get to Trudeau because he was very high in the polls at that point, they said, look, this is an ethics violation because Trudeau, you, Justin Trudeau, you and your wife and your mother have all been, you know, working with or partnering with this charity in some way or another. You, Justin Trudeau, have spoken on the stage at these We Day events. Your mother, you know, is a fundraiser for the charity and speaks about mental health and bullying. And your wife has recorded podcasts for this charity relating to mental health and bullying and all sorts of other things. And so this is just you violating ethics rules to give this program to your friends at We Charity and a windfall. And part of it was, if you had unpacked that, you would have said, like, this is all a joke. It makes no sense. Like, the charity doesn't stand to make any money. So there's no giving anything to anyone. The second thing that's interesting is We Charity doesn't know anything about the government's process in terms of awarding the contract. So a lot of people started saying, well, this is a sole source contract and We Charity ran afoul of conflict rules. And you'd sort of say, well, We Charity is not subject to any conflict rules. We Charity has no idea how the government in cabinet decided to award the program. We Charity has no visibility into the government procurement process. We Charity has no visibility into what rules apply to how the Trudeau and the Liberal government do things. We Charity didn't even know if Justin Trudeau had recused himself from the decision to vote to approve the program. And the same was true of the finance minister in Canada who resigned over this whole scam. And so part of it was We Charity, the allegations against We Charity, which is very scant. There was just no evidence that We Charity had done anything wrong. But, you know, this scandal, for opposition politicians to make a scandal out of it, you know, it's not enough, David, for... it just wasn't enough for, like, if Justin Trudeau gave the money to Mother Teresa, it doesn't work. To really make it a scandal, you have to show that the administration was given to the wrong people. And these people are up to no good. And so quickly the message became, let's vilify We Charity. Let's ask hard questions about We Charity. Let's pick on the founders of We Charity. That became the political message. And so the allegations all sort of got mixed in, where people would say that We Charity did wrong. And you'd say, what did they do wrong? And people would say, well, I don't know. They must have done something wrong. They were obviously shady. They're in bed with the Trudeau government in like this cronyistic deal. And you'd say, wait a minute. Like, what is, you know, and you try to unpack it and it was very challenging. So those were the allegations. And really, it just opened the floodgates where one after the other, people would start looking at the charity and criticizing some aspect of it. And then you had some fringe players on social media who hated the charity for various reasons, and they would attack its international work and say its international development work was a problem and question its model. And when We Charity would try to explain or defend that, someone would say, oh, look at all their real estate holdings. And someone would say, what do you mean? The board approved our real estate holdings. Our real estate holdings are our reserve fund for our charity. That's why we bought it. People would say, ah, well, then look at something, you know, and it just went on and on. And there was just so much noise and so many allegations that were never responded to and never defended, that it just became a toxic thing. And ultimately, We Charity had to close in Canada because it couldn't raise money anymore and it couldn't do its work anymore. And I thought that was a great shame because there was really no evidence that anyone at the charity had done wrong. There was no evidence that the charity wasn't delivering for its beneficiaries in a profoundly powerful way. And there are like huge losers as a result of this. The losers are millions of children. The losers are hundreds of thousands of educators. The losers are, you know, children and women in impoverished countries like Kenya, who were, you know, the prime beneficiaries of sustainable development projects that We Charity was working on. And I just felt like no one's talking about those. So the long, long answer to your question, but that's the narrative arc.
No, but because it's important, isn't it? Because we have run into this thing where something that calls itself a news channel has become an opinion channel. You know, if you're of a certain age, you remember when the news came on in the morning, it came on again at lunchtime, in the evening, and then at 10 o'clock. And what it told you was news. There was none of this in between the news, people having opinions on things. And
that's right.
Because people now have opinions, they run into this problem where they do whatever they can to get attention. And you mentioned some at the very beginning where investigative journalists have stopped existing. And now what we have is headline hunters. So,
right.
And I just want to be clear. So effectively, it's a not-for-profit charity. So nobody benefits from these contracts in terms of financial gain. You know, there's no shareholders, there's no dividend payments or anything like that. And
right.
you were the largest organization whose actual foundation or the nucleus of what you were was providing effectively advocates for vulnerable children. Was it like a mentorship type program?
Sorry, say that it's a mentorship type program? No, type program. It's more about basically providing the tools for young people to go do charitable work themselves.
Right.
And basically work for organizations, work on fundraising campaigns, hats and scarves for the homeless, feeding the hungry, climate change, anti-bullying, things like that.
So it's effectively an organization that you said that empowers young people to get work experience in a way they might not otherwise have got work experience. And and as you said, so you're the largest charity in Canada that does this. You work directly with a certain age group and target specific tools and specific needs. The government says, hey, we've got all these people come out of school who can't do apprenticeships, can't do internships. The economy is effectively on its knees and we don't know where it's going to go. You guys, would you be able to do something about this? Because it's actually your area of expertise. And then everyone went up in arms and said, no, this is corruption.
That's basically right. That's basically right. I mean, people used it. It was a collateral consequence. I mean, you had politicians in Canada, opposition politicians on both sides of the political spectrum, by the way, on the left and the right, who saw in this an opportunity to level accusations at the Trudeau government and to suggest that there was cronyism and ethics violations by the Trudeau government. By the way, this was easy pickings because Trudeau had been accused already of ethics violations many times in the past. And so this was an area where it's fertile ground to try and attack him. And that's where it started. And then, you know, it just blew up from there and people started, you had to make We Charity a villain in order to manufacture a scandal.
Because it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because, well, I'm going to potentially open myself up to criticism here, and it's not, and I need to be careful how I word this, not because I'm trying to avoid criticism, but on one hand, it's the job of opposition politicians to do whatever they can. Job is the wrong way. They're going to regardless, because there's no ethics in politics. And the moral compass of politicians is right up there with scum, to be frank. So they're always going to do whatever they can to tear down somebody. And we as people require the media to be the ones that raise the voice where it's supposed to be raised and shut it down somewhere else. But they seem to have got caught up in this partisan, we're going to say whatever we can because we hate you. And we're not going to separate fact from, yeah, do you know what? There's nothing to see here, but screw it. We're going to have a go at it anyway. And there's never this accountability to what the outcome is. It's always just about, can we destroy this? And they probably would never had any intention of destroying the We Charity. Just, can we destroy Trudeau? And, you know, like you said, it could have been Mother Teresa. Who cares?
Right. Well, that's right. But I think, I think if your point is, look, partisanship is a very destroying force. I mean, I think opposition politicians basically, their job is to oppose.
Yes.
And I understand that. Their job is to oppose government policy. But it's to oppose government policy in the service of the public, right? I mean, it's to be a loyal opposition. It's to basically say, here's the counterpoint to what the government is saying and a different way of thinking about it. It's not to invent scandal and create and peddle in lies and misinformation to try and bring down your opponent. Because at some point, now you're engaged in a form of partisanship that has no relationship with public service. Right. You're not actually engaging, doing anything. And that's part of the American situation. You know, what I call in Canada, this book, one of the themes of the book is the increased, what I call Americanization of Canadian politics. And it's this idea that, I mean, everybody knows what I mean when I say it, because, you know, in the United States, we're all very well accustomed to the idea that politics is loud and shrill and it's speeches and echo chambers for yourself and for your constituents. Mm-hmm. And you could have two alternative realities. I mean, you could put on CNN and Fox News, and they might as well be talking about two completely different countries.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even know. If you were a man from Mars and came down to watch, you wouldn't think they were talking about the same place because all the issues are different. Everything they're focused on is different. And and people just keep on saying whatever they need to say. And it's all misinformation. Not all, but it's a lot of misinformation.
In the UK, we had it with Brexit. It did, you know, right. And I don't care which side, whether you voted for Brexit, whether you voted for Remain, give me one example where there was a media debate where people actually discussed the issues.
That's right.
There wasn't.
That's right.
And both sides had a valid point. A valid point. Both sides had a valid point. You know, if you voted for Remain, if you voted for Brexit, both sides, you had points that needed to be listened to, and not a single organization accommodated that. They all just turned it into a screaming match of who can make the most noise.
That's right. That's right. And so that that's what happened here. I mean, you had a situation in which, you know, it's just all shrill and misinformation. And I do think the politicians need to be held to account. I think increasingly in our society, whether that's in Canada, the UK, or the US, or many democracies, I think people have just become numb to the idea that lots and lots of misinformation will be sent around, that it doesn't really matter, and that it's up to you to like sort out what's true and not true. But the problem is there isn't enough time for people to do that, and there isn't a source that people can rely on that for, and they can't do it themselves. And so, you know, if you have the media peddling a certain narrative for long enough, it will just stick. And here the narrative was, you had politicians who were tweeting thousands of times that We Charity is this bad organization that Trudeau gave money to. And then people writing stories saying, allegations arise that We Charity has, like, you know, some bad history and some ties with the Trudeaus. And then the headlines just spin on themselves. And then if you're an ordinary citizen, you basically say, I thought We Charity was great. And someone will say, well, why do you think it's not great now? And so, well, I don't know, but like, it's obvious that they're shady. Look at them. Yeah, yeah. They're shady. And the next thing you know, the name is toxic. And the next thing you know, your sponsors are calling saying, look, there's too much heat right now. We can't continue to fund you because we can't tarnish our reputation. And there's no way to explain. And there's no one doing the work. And so, you know, going back to what you said at the top there, it's just the opposition politicians, I think, they bear a lot of responsibility here. So does the Trudeau government, by the way,
for not
setting the record straight. And if your job is to hold power to account by setting the record straight, I'm all for it. If your job is to basically peddle misinformation so that you attack the government by making people less smart, less well-informed, more confused, then I think you know that's really not the job of a politician. I think that's really, you know, sad and condemnable.
Just before I go into the next question, how are you for time?
I'm okay right now. But I'm okay right now.
Yeah. The thing that, and I'm just going to mention this, one of the things that we've had a problem in the UK, and I think it's a problem around the world, is that several governments introduce a thing called fact checkers, where you go on these things and they check your facts. And they've turned out to be biased and not accurate in their fact checking. So, and not every fact, but certain facts. And COVID was a big example of things that were told by various governments and the World Health Organization, and it turned out they weren't entirely true. And in defense to some of these things, it was turned out not to be true in hindsight, and we're all exceptionally wise in hindsight. But there's a line that politicians shouldn't cross, and there's a line that the media shouldn't cross.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you think that the media, so I'm not excusing politicians, I just have lower expectations of them. You know, it's
right.
If I'm trying to tear down the Trudeau charity, the Trudeau government, there's an element of me that's going to throw mud wherever I can throw it and hope something sticks. And it's
sure.
So where do we say that actually, do you know what? The fault of this is with the media for not actually having some integrity.
Right. I think the media has a lot of fault here. So, you know, my book is really focused on politicians and what they did, but also really heavily on the media. And it's a pretty stinging criticism of, I think, the media across Canada, because I really think investigative journalism failed Canadians in this saga. And part of it was the job of the media is to, like I said, to at least the mainstream media,
yeah,
is to inform. And here I felt like people just reported on the questions, or, you know, gave the questions a life that they didn't deserve, and then didn't provide the answers, didn't do the work of saying, like, what's the reality here? And in many times, the media outlets were just part of the problem. They were propagating, they were supporting a political narrative and propagating views about We Charity that didn't make any sense. And even when We Charity sent in corrections and said, look, you know, this is wrong, here are the facts, here are the documents, they would just keep on printing it. One of the most salient examples is the Globe and Mail, which is, you know, the most respected newspaper in Canada's national newspaper. The Globe and Mail would have a world in which it kept on referring to the grant program as a $900 million or a $1 billion program. And that was like a soundbite that opposition politicians wanted. They were going to keep calling it a $1 billion program. In truth, it was never going to be more than a $500 million program. Now, that's a lot of money still.
That's a big difference, though.
Yeah, but it's a big difference, and it's just a fact. Meaning it's not capable of debate. Like, it's not, it was never going to be more than that. The record is clear. And yet, the Globe and Mail would just print 900 million over and over again on hundreds of occasions. And what I reveal in the book is I show emails in which We Charity goes to the editor of the Globe and Mail and the people responsible for making corrections and says, look, this is just false what you're writing. It's the wrong number. And actually, there's an email correspondence. I review it in the book. It's like the public never hears this. Is the editor of the Globe and Mail writes back and says, I Googled it. 900 million and grant program equals this many hits. 500 million and grant program equals this many hits, so we're staying with our number. And you're like, well, how can that? That's ridiculous. That's insane. How could that possibly be your basis? It's either right or it's wrong. And it just shows you, like, the fact that you can even get that kind of response was unbelievable. And there's a lot of similar responses that I lay out in
that,
the book.
That should just in itself be illegal.
That's right. That's right. But I put the names in the book. I mean, it's an email. It's a physical email that I have, which is totally insane. And you add on to that the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. I mean, the CBC, you know, is the most respected, you know, news channel in Canada, and its program, The Fifth Estate, put on two documentary specials on We Charity, in which they invited, like, certain critics of We Charity or people who didn't think highly of it or some disgruntled people to sort of comment negatively on some of the charity's activities. And I gotta say, it really shocked me because I had a lot of faith in the CBC and journalism until this point. But I reviewed it, and I devote a whole chapter. Chapter 15 of my book is called The Fifth Estate, because that was the program. I devote a whole chapter to this. It is just false what the CBC put on the air. And I don't say that in a way that is like conspiracy theory oriented or anything like that. I mean, it is demonstrably false, I say as a lawyer. It's just... It's provably wrong what you're listening to. And, you know, they're saying the light is red and I can show you it's green, that kind of false, you know? And it was amazing because they went with it anyway. And the CBC put up, and now We Charity is suing the CBC in the United States for defamation because, and that case is still progressing because it just did so much damage because you had the CBC air these documentaries. And if you just watch them, you would come to the view that, oh my God, We Charity is awful. And you'd also come to the view, you'd also question your own participation in We Charity's programming. You'd say, oh my God, what have I been doing all this time? This is terrible. And it was just untrue in so many important respects. And so I, long-winded way of saying, I think the media really fell down on the job here. And one of the things my book does is really just really explain what happened and how that worked and lay it all out in an evidence-based way, and then people can make their own decisions.
I just want to go back because I'm still rattling it around in my head. When an editor of a national magazine, newspaper, media company comes back and says, yeah, when I Google 900 million, that gets this many hits. And when I Google 500 million, it's less. So fuck it. I'm going to stick with this. And that's just like, hang on a second. It's just like, that should actually be a criminal offense because you just actually admitted, I know I'm telling lies and I'm really happy with it because look, that's almost the Neanderthal equivalent of saying she's got big boobs, so I'm going to keep clicking on it.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's you're supposed. This is it's frustrating. This is, I don't know how somebody can just be that blazing about. I do not care what the truth behind the story is.
Right.
I'm selling a product.
Right. Well. That's one interpretation of it, and probably the right interpretation. But the worst one, the slightly more kind interpretation of it is.
You're much better at this than me.
No, but because I'll tell you why, because it seems really odd to me. I'm sure the Globe and Mail would absolutely never accept in any way, shape, or form that it has been, it has not been thoughtful here, or that it's just doesn't care. I think the worst outcome is that the newspaper is so blind to the difference at this point between actually doing the investigative work yourself and just reporting on what the popular narrative is.
Yeah.
And they've mixed them together, right? So she seems to be saying, well, I'm Googling it and this is what it's telling me, so that's the story. And of course, that's a full defense for my story. And the answer is, well, peel back the onion. If your story is We have researched at the Globe and Mail what Google says about this grant program. And we'd like to tell Canadians how Google works and what it tells you and what the current trend line is. Well, okay, that's one story. It's probably less interesting, but it's one story. But if what you're doing is using Google or take any other proxy, social media, you just using what is a trend line in some way and saying, well, that's a substantiated basis that we can use as a proxy for investigative journalism, then you're in very dangerous territory. And I think it's a great example. And to me, you know, I think her answer reflects that she's not thinking about them differently.
Well, surely there's an element, there must be some form of, I don't know Canadian law, but there must be some form of freedom of information request where you can just actually apply to the Trudeau government and say, can you confirm the amount that you've given to the We Charity, please?
Oh, yeah, yeah, but those were all done. I mean, it was in the public record. It was in parliamentary testimony.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Over again. So if it's actually public record.
David, it's crazy. It's much crazier than that. There's no secret about it. It's not like it wasn't clear. No. So when the Globe and Mail is refusing to correct it, it's not that it has to go file a Freedom of Information Act. We gave them the parliamentary records. Every single thing is public record. It's not, it's 100% confirmable. It's the only reason that it's not being confirmed is that opposition politicians have picked a higher number. And the reason they picked a higher number, it's not without any foundation. It's when the program was first conceived of, in a press conference, one of the lower deputies said, maybe we'll get to a program that could be as high as 900 million or 980 million. We're going to see where we go. 3 weeks later, when the program gets passed, nothing like that happens. And the program is created at 500 million. And the only place you could ever find the record is that one nugget earlier on, which is now dispelled by thousands of pieces of paper that will tell you that it's a $500 million program. I mean, the money flowed through. That was the money that was there. The government allocated only $500 million for it. But people, you know, the politicians took that number and liked it better because it sound a billion, Trudeau's $1 billion gift to We Charity, Trudeau's $1 billion.
But I can, know, that, like I said, I'm not, I sound like I'm dismissing politicians. I'm not. They shouldn't do it. They shouldn't. Everybody needs an accountable measure. And for politicians, that accountable measure is supposed to be the media who then inform the public correctly and the public then vote. And when it's on public parliamentary record and they're presented with those records that look, you have to stop saying $900 million or $1 billion, but it's 500 million. And they're like, so Google says no. Google says this number is much better. Yeah, you know, it's just right. Like, no, that should come under criminal offense.
I think you're right. It probably doesn't, sadly, but in fact it doesn't even attract much attention. But I highlighted it all there in the book, and you know that's the reason it's there. And you know I wrote what we lost, you know, inside the attack on Canada's largest children's charity because of that. And I wanted to set the record straight, and I also wanted to make sure that people were hearing voices that I think had been left out of the debate and dialogue, where there was a lot of noise in the political landscape that didn't allow a lot of people, including young people, to voice how they felt, and. And I think, you know, to really see what's been lost so that people can take stock and say, do we want this to happen again? Or do we want to do a better job of holding the media to account? Do we want to do a better job of holding politicians to account? Are we satisfied with this being the state of politics? And I think that type of introspection, you know, is just, we don't do enough of it. And we really need to do a lot more. So
just lastly, has anyone since it's collapsed, and has any of them come forward? Have you been able to have a conversation with any of them where they said, "Look, we got that completely wrong, and maybe we need to set the record straight"?
No. I think there have been some minor media players that have said, You know, in hindsight, you know, maybe we got carried away here, but I no, none of the major people who are in the media or politicians who are responsible for propagating really what are just basically lies. I'd like to find a softer word for them, but there aren't softer words. They have never apologized. In fact, they've done quite well. Most of the people who are the chief antagonists in this book, and really the propagators of misinformation, all of them are doing fine. All of them have profited from the scandal, either in terms of actually financially profited or in terms of having their reputations bolstered. And the only real victims are the charity itself and all the millions of children and educators and women and children in impoverished countries. That's who suffered. That's who doesn't have clean drinking water now in Africa. That's who, you know, doesn't have schools to attend in Ethiopia. That is kids who don't have, you know, educational tools in their classrooms relating to civic engagement and service learning. That's who suffered. The politicians and media there, they all won, including Trudeau himself, who was reelected in the, you know, post this scandal. With the same majority. In other words, it had no impact at all on him.
So it was a complete waste of time.
A complete waste of time, but enormous costs borne by people who politicians and the media don't seem to care to talk about.
That's crazy. Crazy. Achieved absolutely nothing except devastation.
That's right. Even the grant program itself, I don't think I mentioned this, David, never happened. So 100,000 school children, 60% of them, by the way, diverse ethnic communities, including heavily in indigenous communities that were very hard hit by COVID. 60% belong to those communities. Almost 100,000 kids were eligible to receive this grant money in the first summer of COVID. So in the middle of a pandemic where children can't, where young people can't get jobs, and the government steps in. This program, We Charity had to step away from it because of the scandal. It just after 5 days of media scrutiny, it just said, "Hey, we're not going to run it anymore. We're out. We you know, we can't do it." Nobody ever picked it up, and the government never did it. Not a single young person got a nickel. So think about that, right? Think about those 100,000 people that they got robbed. Their government just completely failed them at every level. You know, and no one was talking about that either, ironically.
And that's the real scandal.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
Thank you very much for your time. If you ever want to do this again or talk about it more, please let me know. I'll happily do it again. Thank you for your time.
All right, David, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And there you have it. That was this week's episode of the podcast. Interesting, disappointing, and frustrating. What can you say? It's all of those things wrapped up into one, and it seems to be becoming more and more a modern curse of the world. Or maybe it's always been like that, and I've just never noticed before. But thank you, as always, for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. And wherever you are, whatever you believe, please take care. Be blessed. Have a great week.